Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, coming from the Upward Sports Studio. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can, in turn, inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson. Have you ever taken a leap of faith and done something that was really hard? We're going to discuss that today. And then I'm going to share my thoughts on our me society and how that relates to running in faith. That is sure to be interesting. So joining me for that, those stories and so much more, is once again Run for God founder Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How's your week been?
It's been one of those weeks where I'm just trying to gather stuff back together. You know, last week I had a rough week health-wise,
yeah,
and struggled. And
how
I'm
are
still,
you doing?
I'm better. Yeah. I'm better. But it's taken me days.
Yeah.
Just I lost 9 pounds last week, and it's not coming back.
Did you really?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I was feeling awful.
Yeah.
And I'm about back to normal now. So now hopefully now I start feeling it in my running.
So it's all coming back to you now.
Yeah.
Isn't that a song?
I think it is.
It's all coming back to me now. Hey, I need to address something. So I had a Countdown Mary. I'm going to call her out.
Yeah.
She messaged me. Did you see her post on?
I don't know that I did.
On Facebook. So she was listening to the podcast where I talked about the picket barn and how I danced with 70-year-old people.
Yeah.
And Mary, she called me out and she said, hey, do you think it's because you were 17 and those people were actually probably in their 30s and 40s? And she posted this picture. I forget what it said, but something about, sorry for thinking you were in your 70s when I was 16 or something. You were actually 30. Anyway, so I did. She got me to thinking, was that really what it was? So I looked up the guy, Joe B. Saunders, who owned the picket barn. And sure enough, he was born in the 20s. So he was actually late 60s, early 70s when I was going there. But I mean, as soon as Countdown Mary said that, I was like, you know, I'm on the receiving end of that now. Because my kids' friends, they think we're like ancient.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, we're not. So I know exactly what she's talking about, but that was cool that she pointed that out, because we do that. I probably did do that when I was younger.
100%.
But these people really were in their 60s, 70s, and 80s that we were dancing with. So I wanted to – so thanks for pointing that out, Countdown Mary.
Yeah, yeah. And then thanks for clarifying, so we know now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, we had a post this week from Stacy Oliva, and she said – am I reading my couch to marathon correctly? It says week 13 is a rest week. I'm not sure I can rest this week. Day 15, plank challenge done and no energy drinks. I heard Dean say in a podcast somewhere about working on one thing at a time, not multiple things at one time. That's me in a nutshell. I'm working on no energy drinks for April. I have been much better at not eating bakery items all the time. I said no to Dunkin' Donuts twice. Progress. God's been guiding me. I don't feel the cravings like I used to. We got this.
Now, if we could just figure out how to say no to that hot sign, Stacy. You know, when you go past Krispy Kreme, the hot sign. Somebody said, I was at a conference this weekend or this past few days in Charlotte. It was a reach gathering for rec ministers from all over the country. Anyway, the guy leading the... he was kind of the MC for the whole weekend. Funny guy. I mean, he was a big guy, just hilarious. And he made the comment. He said, I'm pretty sure that the star that the wise men saw was actually a Krispy Kreme hot sign that they were following. And he was talking about how that just draws us in. So I know exactly where you're at, Stacy.
100%. Yeah. Well, first, let me say, yes, it's a good idea to take a week off. After you get through reaching one of these goals. And there's a couple of reasons for that. First of all, it's going to get harder.
Mm-hmm.
So you better enjoy
sure.
the time now, right? To really, really enjoy it. Because later on, you're going to want that week off. And so take the week off and enjoy it. The other thing is our bodies need it.
Yeah.
Physically, we need it. And I know people look at me and they go, well, you run every day, so why can't I run every day? Well, understand it took me years and years and years mm-hmm. to get to
decades.
The point.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's not always, I'm not always the smartest guy either.
Sure.
There's a lot of times I probably shouldn't be running yeah. and I'm doing it anyway. So yeah, don't use me as a guide. The other thing here she talks about is this, you know, one thing at a time mm-hmm. approach. You can call it incrementalism. I like to mm-hmm. to look at it that way. You know, we're probably all doing things that we don't like, mm-hmm. that we would like to stop. And if you take one thing and you put a focus on it, it really does. It
yeah.
really is a lot easier to do when you try to do it that way. But when you lump it in with everything else,
sure.
or you take a week where you know, you're going to be just crazy busy with some project or something else going on, and that's the week you're going to quit doing X, Y,
yeah.
Z. That's not the best week. Do it yeah. on a week where you can focus on it, and you'll realize you can make
it. Yeah, that's why we tell people in the 5K challenge, this is not the time to start a crash diet.
Yeah.
For many reasons, but the biggest one being just don't try to do everything at one time. You know, this is something where I really don't struggle. I struggle with plenty of other things, but I eat my green beans on my plate before I move on to my mashed potatoes. You know, I am that person, so yeah. I'm very segmented in what I do. But I mean, and plus another reason for taking a week off, going back to the week off or week off and then a week unstructured, is the mental side of it. You know, there is a lot of truth in absence makes the heart grow fonder. We want you to stay excited. We want you to almost be, you know, kind of having withdrawals from running, you know, because we want you to stay engaged. Because if it's just, you know, if all you're looking at is the end of a tunnel and all you're seeing is an oncoming train, it's going to seem hard to get out. But if you look down the tracks and you see daylight at the other end of the tunnel, and you have that break, there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
I like that visual. By the way, you know, she talks about giving up energy drinks.
Mm-hmm.
The word energy drink, it sounds good. Mm-hmm. Right? It sounds like it'd be something to be good for you. Energy drinks.
Sugar.
Yeah, give me some of that.
Sugar.
Right? But when did we start? Because I remember when I was young, we didn't have this problem when I was young. Mm-hmm. When I was young, if something was labeled as something, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whatever it's labeled, it may very well be the opposite.
Sure.
Like in politics, when they name a bill, they name it the opposite of what it actually does. I mean, it's crazy, isn't it? Anyway, find a bad habit, an excuse, a whatever it is that you've got, and take that thing, put it in focus, and then get rid of it. And, you know, once you do it for a month or two, it's in the rearview mirror.
Sure.
Our trivia question from last week, who is the American woman who won three times in a row on the women's side of the World Cross Country Championships? We talked about Craig Virgin last week, who won twice, is the only American male to win. And Lynn Jennings is the woman who won three World Cross Country titles in 1990, 91, and 92. And Lynn Jennings, you hear that name and you're like, I've never heard of that one. Just like last week, you probably never heard of Craig Virgin. These names, these people who are famous for cross country just aren't very well known. It's really interesting. But Lynn Jennings was really good. As a matter of fact, you know, back in when we were talking last week about Craig Virgin, how he was good at kind of that range right there around the 10K range. Things a little longer, a little shorter than 10K seemed to be his wheelhouse where he was really, really good at it, right? Lynn Jennings was good at everything from 1500 to a marathon. I mean, she could run anything. Mm-hmm. She was really virtual or what's the word I'm looking for?
Versatile.
That's the word I'm looking for.
It's kind of like that light at the end of the tunnel I was trying to figure out while I go.
Yeah.
I was having a hard time getting that in my head.
Well, she did win a bronze medal in the 10K on the track in 1992 in the Barcelona Olympics. She had an indoor 5K world record in 1990, so she was really good. She was born in Princeton, New Jersey. Interesting, she was born there near Princeton, and then she moved and went to high school near Harvard. So she's hanging around those Ivy Leaguers. She had to run on the boys' cross country team when she was in high school because they didn't have a girls' team. Hmm. You know, back then it just wasn't real popular for the girls, and so she was going to get it done one way or another. Probably made her better, I would think, running with those guys. She graduated high school in 1978 and ran the Boston Marathon unofficially the year she graduated. Is that crazy? Hmm. You don't hear about anybody doing that.
What does run the Boston Marathon unofficially mean?
She didn't register. She just jumped in and ran it. Yeah. See, back in that time.
What do we call that? Pirate?
Bandit.
Bandit, yeah.
Yeah.
Bandit,
yeah. Yeah. But back then, you didn't have all the people in the Boston Marathon you have today. You know, back then you had.
You probably couldn't do that now. You probably couldn't get down to the start line.
I don't see how you could. Yeah. I mean, they're checking bibs and stuff as you get in. Even the Peachtree Road Race is hard to do that with these days. Yeah. But anyway, in 1978, as a high schooler, she ran 2:46, which would have put her third in the race if they had counted it.
Wow.
She did go to Princeton. And she graduated in 1983. She had several conference titles, but she was still unsatisfied with what she had done. But for some reason, you know, by 1984, by the time the Olympics came around, she hadn't got it all put together. So she was a little bit of a later bloomer than a lot of folks are, especially for women. You know, a lot of times women are early bloomers. She was more of a late bloomer. But she ran the first of her 8 World Cross Country Championship races in 1986. She took second the first time she ran. And then she was fourth, sixth, before she broke through with a victory in 1990. And then, of course, she won those next 2 years. Interestingly, that last time she won it, the championships were held in Boston at Franklin Park. It's a very famous cross country area. And she ran on that very same cross-country course when she was in high school. Hmm. So here she is at the World Cross-Country Championships running the same course she ran when she was in high school.
That's crazy.
Isn't that crazy? That's pretty cool, though, isn't it? And it was a fun race. I couldn't find a whole lot online of her running. But I did find this race. The problem was this race the commentary wasn't in English. So all I could do is just watch it, and it was very poorly done. Back then, there weren't very many people who did this, but it was her and 2 other ladies, and they just battled. They were shoulder to shoulder the whole race, and in the last 100 yards, she just ran away from them like they were just standing still. It was pretty impressive. There was snow on the ground. It was muddy. It was cross country. Mm. It was pretty cool.
Right up your alley, wasn't it?
It was, man. So, yeah, she had several American records. She ran 31:19 for 10K, which is still a pretty impressive and pretty respectable time for a 10K today. I mean, it's not nowhere near a record, but it's pretty good. So I wish I could have found more. I did find one video of her running an indoor mile. And I knew this was a thing because I remember my first indoor race was on a 176-yard track, tiny track. Mm-hmm. And I knew it was a thing. And over the last several years, I thought, was I just hallucinating? Was it really a 200-meter track? And I just remember it being smaller than it really was. Was there really such a thing? I mean, I really questioned myself because I haven't seen anything. Well, this race was on a 176-yard track. So 10 laps to a mile. And it was fun to watch. But man, oh man, you talk about.
That would be hard to run. I mean, that's just, you're constantly in a turn.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, the turns are really sharp.
Yeah.
I mean, it's banked, but the turns are really sharp. So, they talk about how indoors is tougher because the turns are sharper these days. But the smallest track I know of is 200 meters these days.
Sure.
So, yeah, pretty interesting anyway. So she more recently, she's been in the news last year because apparently her old coach was caught, was doing some unsavory things, and she testified and everything. So she kept all that to herself for all those years.
Wow.
And just recently came out. But she was always a good, classy lady and was fun to watch. She was a fierce competitor, though.
Mm. Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back, Dean. So, well, this is where we usually talk about, or we usually reach out and say, we need you to submit your story. So I've got a little story I want to put in right here. And it's really illustrates the power of our story and why we need people to submit their story. I said I was at a Reach gathering up in Charlotte this past week. And we had some breakout sessions, and there was a lot of great teachers and orators and people there just sharing different things on different subjects. And I saw that one of them was on, I can't remember exactly what it was on, but it made me think it was going to be talking about your story. Mm-hmm. And so I went into it, and the guy by the name of Bob Schindler was giving this talk. And Bob is actually the one that puts on the Reach conference. And so he's a great speaker, just a really dynamic guy. He was a professional golfer back in the day, and just really sports enthusiast. But when we sat down, Bob put up a picture of a motorcycle on the screen. And he said, "Motorcycles are dangerous." And he just stared at us. And do you know where I'm going with this?
No.
So we all kind of looked at him, and, you know, it was awkward, which is what he was wanting.
Right.
And then he puts up another picture, and it's a picture of a, looks like a country road and with a curve in it. And you're like, where is this guy going with this? Yeah. And Bob said, I think he gave the year, but it was many years ago. He was riding a motorcycle, and there was this section of road that we were looking at, which you talked about a track bank. This was a curve in the road, but it was an inverted bank, so it was banked out. He said, I was riding down the road, and the last thing I remember was going off the road into some gravel and the motorcycle flipping, me going over the handlebars. He said, that's the last thing I remember. And he talked about, you know, the injuries and everything that came along with it. And he said, it could have killed me. And he said, I came back to the spot a few months later, and I took this picture. And he said, I began to weep. And he said, for this reason, motorcycles are dangerous. And the point he was making is, with the gospel, our tendency is to say, you need Jesus. But the more effective thing to do is tell your story and what Jesus has done through you. Mm. And I don't know, it was the most powerful thing I heard the whole weekend, because it really illustrated the power of our story.
Wow.
When he said motorcycles are dangerous, when he led with that, we were like, okay.
Yeah.
But then after his story, I never want to own another motorcycle.
Yeah.
And that's the power of illustrating the seemingly simple stories. They impact somebody else. And I know motorcycles are dangerous, but I've never had anything to really tie that to. Mm-hmm. People know, most people, especially in the United States, know to some degree they need Jesus. But your story illustrates why they need Jesus.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I just wanted to bring that up and let everybody know that stories. I was in several breakout sessions where they were talking about the power of our story, which we all know is our testimony. Yes, our testimony is typically the point at which we met Christ, but testimony is really nothing more than your story. And it can be post-Christ, it can be pre-Christ, it can be at the moment you met Christ, but people relate to all those different stories. And for that reason, I need you to submit your story, because they're so effective. We hear it all the time of how these stories, not stories that we wrote, it's your stories, how they're impacting people all around the country.
Yeah, that's great.
So submit your story.
I love that. What a great way to illustrate something. Well, we have this from Instagram, and it's the person who did it is mpd.green. I'm not sure who that is, but it says this. We did it. 2 hours, 57 minutes, and 30 seconds, and a new Guinness World Record for the fastest marathon in a six-person costume. Absolutely incredible support throughout from wider team Phil, crowds, and runners at the Manchester Marathon. We really enjoyed it. Full of drama, but we got over that finish line in under 3 hours, which was our main target. It was great to run around the streets where Phil grew up in Phil's name. Hashtag Team Phil and hashtag MNDA, all plastered all over the caterpillar. We could tell from what people were shouting at us, we made a difference today. Please, please donate if you can. We are streaming towards that 10,000 pound target. Your funds really will make a difference. At MND Association and our search for a cure. What a day. Apparently, you can go to justgiving/MarcusGreen13 and you can give to this. MND, I don't know that I ever heard of it. If I have, I didn't know what it was called. Motor neuron disease affects the nerves known as motor neurons. These nerves tell your muscles what to do and are found in the brain and the spinal cord.
Say motor neuron disease 5 times fast.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Anyway, this is a pretty cool thing. Actually, Travis has once sent this to me.
Yeah.
Off of Instagram. There was a picture of them just getting through with the marathon, having been in this centipede costume. So six of them all running together.
Haven't we talked about the centipede costume before?
We have. I can't remember why, we have.
That rang a bell when you started reading this.
Yeah. But this is pretty neat. I look at this record a little bit like I look at, you know, the record. You know, I'm part of a record group, American record group in the 55 to 59 age group for the 4x800 meter relay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all that fast, but it's hard to get four 55 to 59 year age guys together to do
together.
A relay and run pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of these guys, right? Yeah. You know, a sub-3-hour marathon, it's not terribly impressive, but it is when you got six of them all hooked together. It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool. I don't know. I'd be interested to hear what these guys' actual marathon times are. I mean, I'm sure there's some 2:30 guys in there.
You would think.
But I wonder if there's one guy in there who's like, you know, a 2:55 guy, and they had to just keep encouraging that guy and bringing him along.
They had that rope tied to him extra tight.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, I think runners a lot of times are like, we're just talking about motorcycle. We're talking about bikers. I don't know if you've met many bikers. Bikers are some seriously...
Oh, bikers as in motorcycle.
As in motorcyclists. Oh, gotcha. Not cyclists, but bikers.
Yeah.
And they are some seriously benevolent people.
Yeah.
They love to help people.
Sure.
And you think they're these old grouchy, terrible people. And most of them are just as nice and friendly and as good a people as you'll find. And they'll do anything. They'll do any kind of a ride or anything to benefit somebody. Well, runners are kind of like that.
Sure.
You know, we just like to help people out. And this is just one more way to do it. So, and a lot of the events we go to have some kind of benefit for somebody or some group. It's cool. All right. Leap of faith. It's a phrase that's been around for a long time. And this story talks about it very directly. It's called Take a Leap of Faith. By our our very own Rhonda Williams. Trust can be a difficult, uncomfortable thing. It goes against human nature. I remember when I was a little girl standing on the edge of the pool, feeling very nervous when my dad said, "Jump, I'll catch you." I hesitated, then hesitated some more. I bet you did too. I knew Dad loved me, but I was afraid of the water. Trusting him enough to let go and jump was oh so hard. What if he didn't catch me? What would happen? What would I be able to get? Would I be able to get back to the surface if my head went under? So many questions, but no answers. Just trust me. Eventually, I worked up the courage to jump, and Dad caught me just like he promised he would. My fear turned to joy. I can remember another time my fear almost cheated me out of a great experience. My husband and I went ziplining through an abandoned gold mine in Alaska. An ambitious goal for someone who's afraid of heights, but I was determined to face my fear and overcome it. The guides went over the safety information, helped everyone in our group put on the helmets and harnesses, and then let us practice on a short, low line. Then it was time for our adventure to begin. We climbed up to the first platform where one of the guides clipped us to the cable, and one by one, we stepped off the platform and sailed through the trees to the next platform. Each platform was higher than the last and the cable longer than the previous one. It took more and more courage for me to step off, let go, and trust the cable. The higher we went, the closer to the trees I stood, earning the nickname Tree Hugger. My husband and the others playfully teased me, but it didn't help allay my fear. Standing on the edge of the platform was terrifying, even though I was securely attached to the cable. The highest platform was 150 feet off the ground. My heart wasn't willing to accept what my brain knew was true. I was safe. I hesitated a little longer with each successive platform, but once I was sailing through the air, all the fear was replaced with sheer joy every single time. I completed the entire course and am so glad I did not let my fear cheat me out of such a thrilling experience. There have been times in my life when God said, "Trust me." He did not tell me what He was going to do or how. He did not show me the plan or provide much information at all. He just asked me to trust Him enough to take that first step. It was scary, and I hesitated. Again, my heart didn't want to accept what my brain knew to be true. I was safe. Just as I did when I jumped to my dad in the pool and stepped off the zipline platform, I worked up my courage, let go, and took a leap of faith. Just as my father caught me in the pool and the cable caught me in the air, God caught me, just like He promised. And every single time, I was grateful that I had chosen to trust Him. I would have missed out on some truly incredible experiences had I let my fear win.
That's a great story, Rhonda.
Mm, yeah.
Have you ever ziplined?
I have not. Have you?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Debbie has.
Holly loves it.
Yeah.
I think the last time we went was up at Ruby Falls, maybe.
Yeah.
Somewhere up there.
That's funny to hear that she loves that. Holly loves it.
Holly's a daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah, she bungee jumps and she does all the sky coasters and the things that slant. Everything on like the Panama City Strip that you see at night, she'll do every one of them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
It's not her personality, but she'll do it.
That doesn't fit her personality, does it? Yeah. Well, this is, she doesn't talk about running here, but I see this a lot in running and walking too, right? Mm-hmm. People who are afraid to try to do something. They're afraid to try to do a marathon or whatever. And there's a lot of people out there that they say they want to run a marathon, but then when it comes time to do it, they're afraid to get signed up, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just got to bite the bullet and do it. Just like in on the platform, you just got to step off. And you'll find that everything's fine. And
well, the thing that was going through my mind as you were reading Rhonda's story is it's a really great picture of faith and fear cannot coexist, because the moment she stepped off, she stepped into faith and the fear was gone.
Yeah.
I mean, we hear that a lot, that faith and fear cannot coexist, and it's just a great picture that it can't.
Yeah.
One's going to overwhelm the other.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Good stuff. You know, there's a high schooler out there that I've worked with a little bit who's got tons of talent, but he's not willing to work hard for it. And the reason why I think I've spent a lot of time with him, so I've kind of analyzed his brain and things. And the reason why I think he doesn't want to do it is because what he's afraid of is he's afraid of being successful. And then with that success is the pressure, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, Christians, a lot of people don't want to become Christians because then they realize now I'm expected to do something better than I've done in the past, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes that's a real fear for us. That just hit me. I don't know why, but Genesis 12:1 says, "The Lord said to Abram, 'Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land I will show you.'" She says, God did not give Abram any more information or provide him with a map. Abram had to have courage to trust the Lord and take that first step.
You know, I've read a lot of commentary on Abraham left everything behind and just went. And we talk about that a lot, and it's true. I mean, Abram stepped out in faith and did what God called him to do. But you know there had to be, I shouldn't say there had to be. I have to think there was a moment in time, albeit maybe a very short time, where Abraham was like, or Abram at that time was thinking, what? You know, all the unknowns, all the what he would be giving up. And I'm saying that, and I'm looking forward to the disciples, and it's kind of the same thing with the disciples. You know, Jesus said, "Follow me," and they got up and they followed him. So maybe there wasn't for Abram, but you have to think, we tend to skim over the fact that Abram is just like us. God calls us to do things, and I mean, we know from looking back that it's always right.
Yeah.
We know that he's in the water with his hands up saying, "Trust me," just like Rhonda's dad. We know there's a track record. We know that he's never, ever failed us. But it doesn't make it any easier many times.
No.
Because what happens is, it's kind of like running. You know, people say, when's running going to get easier? Well, it's not. Because the next thing that he's going to ask us to do, just like that level of trees that Rhonda was going up in, we've conquered that. He's going to ask us to do something bigger.
Yeah.
And the quicker we can get excited about that,
yeah,
excited about facing our fears, that's when the real magic starts to happen. But I don't think it's something that any of us conquer.
It's true. Some people are a lot better at it than others, I think, for sure. And it's really easy. It's really easy to say something. It's really easy to say that I have faith until it comes time to pack up your stuff and get on your camel and leave the area, the only area you've ever known, right? And go somewhere where you have no idea where you're going. The more we do that and the more it turns out well, the better we become, because we realize. This weekend I was at a softball game. One of my granddaughters was playing, and I was sitting next to this lady, and we started talking, and gosh, she's got an incredible testimony. The woman, she almost died. An incredible testimony. But she was telling me that at one point in her life, when she was young, her son was 7 years old, and they were having a hard time making ends meet. And she was like, "I don't know what I'm going to do." She only had $60, and she needed a month's worth of groceries. Hmm. And she was like, "I don't know what I'm going to do." Her seven-year-old son said, "You just don't have enough faith then. God's going to provide." Hmm. And she's like,
talk about the faith of a child.
Yes. So what happened was that seven-year-old prayed right there. That seven-year-old started praying, and she bowed her head with that seven-year-old, and they prayed. And you know what happened? Hour or two later, their dog dug up a sack full of money out of the woods adjacent to their house and dragged it home to them. I mean, what kind of crazy story is that? But that happened.
Yeah.
And anyway, the she called the police, you know, because she's like, I don't know what this is, but you could tell it had been there for a long time. It was all mildewy and it was really looked really bad. And the police were like, you know, it's probably somebody's drug money that they buried back
there.
Dropped
out of a plane or.
And we don't know where it came from. So, you know, by all means, keep it. So she wound up with a few $100s that was buried in this because, you know, I know people look at a story like that and they go, really? But these things happen.
They happen. Yeah, they happen. Sure they happen.
And what's interesting is, again, that's the way we have to look at taking that leap of faith is like that seven-year-old did. It's just a matter of fact, right? It didn't. He didn't need anybody to say, well, you know, there's a chance that God could take care of that for you. It was like he knew he could. And he prayed for that. And it's a cool story.
What a great story.
Yeah. Esther 4:15-16. Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai. Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. She follows with, Esther's courage to trust God saved all her people. I believe that during her 3-day fast, she asked God to let the king grant her request to spare the Jews. But I also feel she was asking him for the confidence to face her fear and step into the king's presence.
You know, I mean, the story of Esther is just incredible. And, you know, I like the translations where it says, if I die, I die.
Yeah.
I mean, that there's not many times where God puts us in those situations. But I think for all of us, we've come pretty close before. I mean, it's really a picture of her giving up everything, which in this case just happens to include her life. But there's times when God calls us to walk away from things. And in our minds, we say, well, God, that's everything. And maybe that's the point. You know, sometimes God calls you to walk away from things that you've allowed to become idols. Because that's where your identity. For me, back in 2009, late 2009, I mean, the sport of running had become my identity. And if you know my story, you know I struggled with, I've either got to give this up or I've got to give it to God. And I chose to give it to God. And then I wrestled with what does that look like? And ultimately, this is what that looks like. But a lot of times when you feel like God is asking you to give up everything, there's a reason.
Yeah.
And it's because that thing has become your everything. And God should be your everything.
Absolutely. That's a good point. This is the thing that I read this story, and we read stories. There's people around the world who we read stories of people really putting their faith into action and doing really hard things, making hard decisions, giving up a lot to get what they want. I was listening to a commentator. It was a political thing, but they were talking about the possibility of civil war in our country. Mm-hmm. And one of the commentators made this point, which I think is pertinent to this. He said, I don't think we'll ever have a civil war again in this country because people just aren't that committed these days to anything. And I thought, ooh, that sounds, you know, again, I'm not talking about the political side of this, but as people.
We're apathetic.
We are
society,
and from a Christian standpoint, we've got to get away from that.
Sure.
We have got to be more committed to what God wants us to do. And get to your point, sometimes that means pointing us in a direction that is the one that doesn't make sense to us, but that's where God wants us to go. And a lot of times, it's something that scares you, right? It's something, you know, it's like somebody. I don't want to run a marathon. I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I run a marathon. Well, what's the worst that can happen? Mm-hmm. You crash and burn in a marathon. Somebody picks you up and takes you to the finish line.
Yeah.
Is that really that devastating?
Sure.
No, but it paralyzes us with fear. right? Yeah. And that's a simple thing. There are obviously much more consequential things, but we can't let things paralyze us. Failure is okay. Mm-hmm. And what happens most of the time when fear gets us, it's usually we're afraid we're going to fail in some way.
But that's the thing, is if God's calling us to do it, there is no failure.
Right.
There may be circumstances that aren't what we thought, but it's not failure. I'll never forget, and this is no pat on my back, because if I'm being completely transparent, I did not want to do this. But I remember in 2011, 12, when we really started seeing that Run for God was taking off, and you know, we knew that we needed to take this to a nonprofit status and really just go all in. God was really pushing Holly and I. You know, I had a successful building and development company that I was a partner in, and Holly, you know, did ultrasound. She had a great living, and God was calling us, you need to sell your stock in your company, and Holly, you need to let your license lapse, which is, she spent years in school. Mm-hmm. I spent years from 18 years old building a company, and I'll be honest, I fought God on this, but he was not letting it go because what was I doing? This is my identity. We put our identity many times in the careers that we do,
yeah,
or the hobbies that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so dangerous. That is the epitome of idolatry, when our identity is in anything but God. And I'll never forget, you know, it was a very, you know, we had a letter in our hand of Holly's ultrasound license renewal, whatever it is she had to do. And I had a phone call to make to my brother to, hey, Jerome, I need to sell my stock to you. I mean, those were two very specific instances. Now, it's not Esther. Yeah. If I die, I die. But in the moment, it's what I felt like.
Yeah, it's,
this is my livelihood. Mm-hmm. God, I can't do this. Now, has it turned out exactly how I thought it would be? Lord, no. But there was no failure in it.
Right.
There was failure in my eyes many times where, you know, we're sitting around the conference room table saying, you know, God, how are we going to get through this? For God's not going to make it.
There were more setbacks than failures.
Yeah. But there are reasons for those.
Yep.
And you look back and you can see that 2020, you were part of many of the meetings.
Yep.
Where we're like, you know, did we mess up? I remember being on walks with Holly and saying, did we mess up here? And thank God for good wives like you and I have. And she she walked me off that cliff several times.
Yeah.
But if we can all have the faith of Esther,
yeah,
and say, God's calling me to do this, and if I die, I die, so be it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is true boldness. I say true boldness is putting your faith into action when the only thing you have to fall back on is what you claim to put your faith in.
Yeah.
How many of us will actually do that? But if you do, it's life-changing.
Yeah. Wow. Matthew 9:9. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Follow me, he told him. And Matthew got up and followed him. Matthew left a high-paying job, a comfortable home, and security to follow Jesus without knowing what exactly he was getting into, and he did it without hesitation. Talk about boldness.
Wow, that's
another great example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think I had ever given Matthew enough credit for what he did until I saw The Chosen.
Well, you also see his personality.
Yeah.
Matthew is not he obviously had the personality, you know, probably borderline, not autistic, but
kind of a geeky.
Yeah. I mean, he was definitely probably on the low end of the spectrum,
yeah,
which means there wasn't a lot of reasoning, you know.
Yeah.
High functioning autism it's logic is not there many times, which is what God wants us to have. He don't want us to, okay, God's calling me to do something. Let me go do a report on the pros and the cons.
Yeah.
God doesn't want logic.
Yeah.
He wants us to do
That's right.
He says.
Well, do you think that God asks all of us to do something that big and bold?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. For some reason, I don't think so. But I don't know that. All I know is
the step you took was a big step. I've taken big steps. I can't help but think that God doesn't ask everybody to take a bold step somewhere in their life, you know?
It's relative because it's, you know,
yes.
Like we say, when is running going to get easier? Well, for the person who's never run before, 90 seconds of running is a big, big, big step. But to you, you've got to get up to 100 miles in the Keys before it's a big step. And so it's really relative. Now, yeah, I think for what is big is different for everybody.
Yeah, I think
and
right.
It's where you're at on your walk.
And it depends on what's it going to take for you to prove to God that you're really relying on Him. For some people, that's a big, big deal, a big thing, bold thing. And for somebody else, it's just letting go of something even small that provides that letting that heart go and actually relying on Him.
Sure.
That's the bottom line, right? Eleanor Roosevelt famously said, "Do one thing every day that scares you. When was the last time you did something that frightened you?" Coming right up, a month from, is it a month? Yeah. A month from today. I'll be 3.5 hours into a 100 miler. So hopefully at this point, I'm...
Does that scare you?
Yeah. It does a little bit. But again, I look at it a lot like I was talking about that marathon earlier. If I don't make it, I don't make it. But it's still a little scary, the unknown. Anytime we do anything that's unknown, it's a little scary, right? Mm-hmm. So, it's not going to kill me. But I don't have any idea what to expect. Mm-hmm. You know, the longest I've ever run is 50 miles. And I did that at the spur of a moment and just crashed and burned. And it was awful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I hope it doesn't go like that. Yeah. I don't consider myself really good at the longer distances. I've never considered myself a good marathoner. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I'm going to be good at 100 miles. But I'm going to give it my best shot.
I think you're going to surprise yourself,
well,
Dean.
We'll see. Yeah. But I have committed myself. I mean, I've made up my mind. I have a certain pace I'm planning to run. And that's where I'm going to start out. And we'll see where that takes me. And... It could be spectacular in two different ways.
Yeah. I did something this past week that I think is out of my comfort zone. I flew to Charlotte, and usually anytime I travel anywhere, I've got everything down to the T figured out. Well, I decided I was going to fly to Charlotte, and I didn't have any plan for how I was going to get from the airport to the hotel. Now, this sounds really stupid to you, I know, but for me, it was a big deal. I didn't get a rental car. I was going to land and I was going to get one there and just kind of, because I had plenty of time, wasn't in a hurry for anything. I land, guess what? They're out of rental cars.
Oh.
So I had to get an Uber and the hotel was like 45 minutes away.
None of the rental car places had a rental car.
All of them were out. I don't know what was going on in Charlotte, but they were all out. But what I learned from the Uber driver, I don't know if you knew this, is that Uber has contracts with all the rental car companies now where, and this is kind of scary if you really think about it, but if you're an Uber driver, if you want to be an Uber driver and you don't have a car, Uber has contracts with the rental car companies. You can go rent one and be an Uber driver. Now, I understand that some people don't have a car just maybe because they can't afford it, but some people may not have cars because they wreck them all. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. So a lot of the Uber drivers are now have a lot of the rental cars out, and that's their job. They'll rent it for 2 days, and they'll go do Uber for 2 days and take it back. So I don't know if that's the reason that they were out of rental cars. They were out of rental cars. And so then, I mean, as soon as I heard that, I was like, I knew it. I should have had this plan. I should have had my rental car booked a month ago. So much for being spontaneous.
It's funny. It's funny because, like you said, that's something that gives you that's hard for you, right? To do something and not have everything planned out.
Yeah.
For me, that's fun.
Yeah, that's right. Fun. It was terrible.
And for me, planning something 6 months from now, I don't find any joy in that whatsoever.
So then I'm with no car, and they had a shuttle going from the hotel to the church where this conference was,
yeah,
which was like 30 minutes away. And I mean, it was long days. We were getting there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the next afternoon, I mean, there was some games and stuff going on that evening, like pickup basketball and just stuff I wasn't interested in. So I went to the lady and I said, hey, when's that shuttle going to start running? You know, it's like 6 o'clock. You know me, I want to be winding down at 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, they don't start running the shuttles till 8:45 tonight.
Oh my goodness.
I was like, no, this. So I'm bumming rides from somebody coming out. I got a ride from the hotel, from the church back to the hotel. And so all weekend I was like, never again. Never again am I doing this.
You know, I met a really interesting guy one time. His name was Mark. And we were at the national championships, track championships.
Yeah.
And this guy I'm just walking through a parking lot. And the guy goes, hey, could you give me a ride back to my hotel? Like, he had no idea who I was.
Well, that's what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I mean, this was at the conference. So no murderers.
Well,
there.
That was kind of the same thing here.
But come to find out, the guy that gave me a ride, he was roommates with our old youth pastor at our church.
See, isn't that funny?
It was like, and he's from like Ohio, and our youth pastor he's Korean, and it's like, how?
So what I hear is it was totally worth it.
No, it's not worth it. I will rent a car from now on a month early.
I still don't have a hotel for next month.
Yeah, you're crazy.
Another question.
And you've slept in your car more than one time, too. So
yeah, well,
I'll just say
that. Tell us about a time you conquered your fear and how it felt, or maybe a time when you let your fear get the best of you and how it made you feel. I remember my first Ironman triathlon. I wasn't worried about finishing the triathlon. I wasn't worried about the bike. I wasn't worried about the run at all. But I'm a terrible swimmer, and the swim terrified me. And the idea that this swim was in the intercoastal waterway, mm-hmm, all these waves, no telling what kind of wildlife was in there. And we later found out after we got through, there was a shark in the intercoastal waterway while we were swimming through there. And it's 2.4 miles. Mm. And that's the longest I'd ever swam. I swam that far in a pool doing laps, mm-hmm, and that's the longest I'd ever
swam.
With a
black line below you.
That's right. And so here I am. I'm out there, and that was scary. It was scary. I remember getting through with the swim and thinking, I'm almost done. You know, I've gotten an hour of my 10-hour journey done, and I'm almost done.
But you got the hard part done.
That's right. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I remember that. I remember when I got through with the bike. I remember handing my bike off to somebody and thinking, I just got a little run left.
A marathon.
Yeah. Good stuff. Have any of the heroes of faith, see Hebrews chapter 11, inspired you to trust God enough to let go and take a leap of faith?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, you got in here, she mentions Abraham. I think that's probably the most, I mean, because, you know, most of the other people in the Bible, it was something specific. I think about the disciples. They kind of picked up and left everything. But Abraham really just left everything. And God said, go. I'm not even going to show you where we're going. Just go. Yeah. And I'll lead the way. At least with Jesus and the disciples, there was a tangible person there,
yeah,
to follow. God, I mean, Abraham was like, okay, what?
Yeah.
Where are we going?
Yeah.
And what do I follow? And so I think that's probably, I mean, it's the best example. And it is the best example because that, you know, there was nothing. It was the voice of God.
And then once he was out there, That's all he could listen to, right?
Sure.
Kind of reminds me, you know, back you mentioned the Run for God journey and, you know, when COVID hit us, you know, everything we did was relying upon these groups meeting together. And
groups in churches.
Yes.
And that was the hardest thing hit was groups in churches.
Right. And so we had to figure out, well, what are we going to do? You know, I mean, and because we were at the point where the option to go back and do what we've been doing, it wasn't there.
Yeah.
There was no option. So we had
you know, I'll never forget that meeting. I mean, you probably remember it as well as I do. Sitting around that table and I'm like, guys, I don't know what we're going to do. Yeah. I don't know how this is going to work. And we've got this little thing called Run Club that we're just getting off the ground. But how's that going to work out? Well, did it work out?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it was a good example because I remember myself, you know, I know you felt the pressure of everybody else. I know you're like me. You're like, I'll take care of myself. You know, I'm not worried about me. Yeah. I'm worried about everybody else. And I just remember I was so at peace. It was like, this is going to work out. God's got it. He's got this thing. It's not a big deal.
Well, I remember vividly because, I mean, and we may be sharing too much on here, but we're not. You know, it's I made the comment. I don't know how we're going to pay everybody. I don't know how we're going to do this. And I remember all of y'all saying, we don't need a check. And I was like, there is no other setting in any other organization. There are, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Where that would have been the stance. Everybody would have been looking, okay, I hear you, Mitchell. We might be back after this is over, but we got to go find you. There was none of that. Mm-hmm. There was none of that. And that is the power of God.
Mm-hmm.
That was our Abraham moment.
That's exactly right.
I mean, it was like, okay, we genuinely don't know how we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But God.
God's going to help us with it.
Yeah.
Do you need something to keep you motivated and to keep fit both physically and spiritually? Upward Sports Run for God Run Club has just what you need to keep you on track for both. Check out runforgod.com and join us today for pennies a day. You won't regret it.
All right, so we're back. You know, why do you think running is not as popular as other sports? You know, when the Olympics come along, it's a big deal, right? And I think track and field, and I think along with maybe gymnastics, are the number one watched events during the Olympics on television and attended. They're heavily attended as well. Tickets sell out. And so it's not that people hate to watch running because people do it every 4 years, right? Mm-hmm. So what is it?
I don't know. And then the sports that are so popular are not popular during the Olympics.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Well, I think we might have found a symptom of it this week. So this past week, the Diamond League is the professional track scene. Mm-hmm. And that's the best in the best meets in the world are all part of the Diamond League meet schedule. And they have been broadcasted on Peacock for the last several years. And that bugged me a little bit because you have to have a membership to Peacock mm-hmm. in order just to watch them. And, you know, other sports don't have to have a, you know, if I want to watch an NFL football game, there's always one on, mm-hmm. right? I may not get to watch the one I want, but I get to watch one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not been that way for track and field. And, well, this past week, they have bid that contract out and Peacock, they're no longer going to be on Peacock. Peacock is $6 a month. So I finally said, I'll pay the $6 a month. I want to see track and field. Well, now that they have bid it out to Flow Track. Well, Flow Track is $30 a month.
Really?
Yes. And Dean is not paying $30 a month to watch track meets. I'm just not going, I won't do it. And I think this is part of the problem with our sport. Another thing that happened here is that in the Olympics, they're going to start paying track and field athletes. The ones who win their events, they're going to pay them $50,000 a year. Well,
who's going to pay them?
I guess World Athletics, which is the governing body for track and field. That sounds great and all, but I fear that what we're doing with track and field is it's all about the money. When it's all about the money, it doesn't lead to a good spot very often. And I'm afraid that's where we are with track and field. I'm afraid that's why we don't have much of it.
We're headed there with college football. I mean, with this
same thing, college football. Yep, college football is going to be destroyed in the next several years, I think, because of what they've done. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Who would pay? I mean, okay, if you won't pay $30 a month, the biggest running geek that I know won't pay that, then who does?
Well, I'm a cheapskate, so I do have both ends of the spectrum.
But you're the biggest running geek I know.
Yeah.
You eat, live, and breathe the professional running scene.
Yeah.
I could care less about the professional running scene. We've established that on this podcast. But yeah, you're a cheapskate, but you invest in the things that you like.
Yeah.
I mean, you pay good money for running shoes. You know that you're not a cheapskate when it comes to the things of your sport necessarily.
Yeah.
So if you won't pay it, then who will?
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to find out.
Yeah.
We're going to find out pretty soon. So we'll see what happens. But I'm hoping, I think track and field is a marketing thing. I think it's part of the problem. One of the things that's going on is Michael Johnson, who is the world record holder in the 200 and the 400 meters back in 1992 Olympics. He's trying to organize some track meets and trying to make things more interesting. And he has some pretty good ideas. So I'll be interested to see what Michael Johnson can come up with. I hope that's going to turn out well because he really loves track and field. So we'll see where it goes. I remember about 15 years ago, we went to a track meet in Atlanta, and the whole idea for this track meet, there were some professionals there. And the whole idea for this track meet was to try to present track and field in a more exciting way. Mm-hmm. They took the pole vault and they put the pole vault pit right up against the stands where you could watch it really close.
High level with them.
Yeah. And it was pretty cool. That was pretty cool. It was an interesting thing to do, but I'm not sure what it's going to take for people to become more interested in track and field. But nobody seems to know what the answer is, but I know the answer is probably not follow the money. So we'll see how it goes. But
yeah,
I'm afraid track and field is just going to go away at some point. Just like I'm afraid, I think football at smaller schools is going to become inconsequential in the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. Like nobody's going to pay attention to it because of what they've done with NIL stuff. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I'd love to see it become more popular. All right. It's a time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Maybe as it relates to this track and field stuff that we were just talking about, I just need to move on. And that's what this week's story is about. It's called Moving On. I want to say something unpopular. Not because I like sensationalism or to make people angry or to prove a point, but because I fear that many people haven't even noticed where we've evolved to as a society. Let me start with some observations from my youth. I don't remember my grandparents ever talking about being stressed out. My grandmother was a single mom with 7 kids. Most of them were out of the house, but they all lived close by. She never complained, at least not that I ever heard. She took care of everyone without making a big deal of it, and she moved on. When I was very young, we lived in my paternal grandparents' attic. There were 4 of us living in a space about the size of my current bedroom. I never heard my parents or my grandparents ever talk about how bad they had it or how stressed out they were with 2 families living under 1 relatively small roof. Was there an occasional argument? You bet. We were in New Jersey, where most people were bilingual, meaning that most people spoke English and the less popular language of debate. But nobody was feeling sorry for themselves because someone disagreed with them. We argued, came to a resolution, satisfying or not, and we moved on. Back then, we had these people called neighbors, and when things got bad, they jumped in and pulled you out of the proverbial ditch. Afterwards, nobody talked about how bad it was. We just forgot about it and moved on. I used to go out and play with my friends all day. When I got thirsty, I drank from the garden hose. If I had a disagreement with my friends, we worked it out, sometimes physically. I remember one time wrecking my bicycle and scraping both knees so bad they wouldn't stop bleeding. What did I do? I went back to my water fountain, the garden hose, and rinsed them off. Then I went back to what I was doing. Did it hurt? Yeah, but it was done, and I didn't talk about it later. We moved on. So what am I getting at here? Well, we don't do enough moving on anymore. When something bad happens, we dwell on it, we milk it, and we talk about what a victim we are. Now, don't get me wrong. There are times to dwell. There are times to talk about things, but we have overcorrected for the past. We didn't deal with things, perhaps, as much as we should have when I was a kid, but now we obsess over everything. This applies to running, too. I've seen so many people who worry so much about what has already taken place that they don't have time to think about what's coming. As a result, bad things happen. Not being prepared for what's coming at you can result in poor performance at best and injuries at worst. When things don't go well, we need to move on. If you've had a bad long run, move on. That one run does not define you, and there's a reasonable chance that it's just an outlier. If your calf begins to hurt, don't lament on what caused it, though it is important to note it, and start to plan what you're going to do to get over it. Don't fall victim to today's default position of trumpeting your misfortune. Instead, find a way to move on by planning your fastest way to recovery. Let me be clear here. I'm not saying that you should never talk about the unfortunate things that happened to you. I'm not saying a little whining about your sore knees isn't warranted, even therapeutic at times. But don't be consumed by it. Don't let it cloud your thinking. Don't fish for sympathy. What do you do? Move on. Whatever the obstacle, plan to get around it the most efficient way possible. We can all apply this to our faith journey too. We all make mistakes. We all fall short of the glory of God. We all sin. And when we do, the Holy Spirit will convict us and we will feel bad about it. But Jesus went to the cross so that we don't have to dwell on those shortcomings. He made moving on possible. Because of Jesus Christ, we don't have to wallow in our sins. Because of Jesus Christ, we can move past our sins and live what the Bible calls an abundant life. The next time you have a setback in your life, focus on the most efficient way to work around it. You will find that the most successful people in the world have nearly all had major setbacks in their lives. But instead of dwelling on those setbacks, they find a way to move on. I can't name one who spent time playing the victim. And if you have difficulty moving past your mistakes, realize that Jesus gives you the opportunity to accept his free gift of salvation that allows you to move on and live a more abundant life. All you have to do is accept it. If you're not sure how to do that, please go to runforgod.com/peace with God to find out how.
That's a great story, Dan. It's something we all need to hear. I think about Lane had when he was on the Southeastern Elite Junior Tri Team or whatever it was, the coach of that team, Kathleen Johnson, I don't know if you remember her.
I remember her, yeah.
But she had a 6-hour rule. And because, you know, kids, when I say kids, we all, if we have that bad race or we miss that big opportunity, we get so tore up. And she says, you've got 6 hours. You can cry, you can moan, you can wallow, you can talk about it all you want. But after 6 hours, I don't want to hear about it again.
Yep.
Move on. And that's such great advice, especially for young people. But for us, I mean, because we do the same thing. We want to keep going back to that well and reliving that moment. When if you're reliving the moment of the past, you're not living the moment that you're in.
Well, what needs to happen is we need more Kathleen. Was it Kathleen?
Yeah, Kathleen.
We need more Kathleens who will say, after 6 hours, I'm not listening to you anymore.
Sure.
Right? Because
that's what she said. Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Because what we have today is we have the more you talk about it and then the more sympathy you get. Now, I understand that a lot of times people do it out of their heart.
Sure.
They care. They want to sympathize with you. And because of that, and because people are willing to do that, mm-hmm. then it makes it easier to just wallow in the bad things that happen to us. And we got to do two things. We got to move past it. if that's us, and we've got to quit entertaining the people who are continuing to drag that thing back out again. It's like, yeah, I heard that. You already said that. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to do it that way, but you know what I mean. We've got to not start rewarding people for being victims.
It's funny you said that. I heard one of the talks this weekend. It was talking about the concept. You're the sum of who you hang around. And the sum of who you hang around is not 1 + 1 or 2 + 2 or 2 - 2. He was talking about how we have adders, we have multipliers, and we have subtractors, and we have dividers.
Wow.
And how the adders is obviously, it's just what it says. They add to your life.
Mm-hmm.
Multipliers compound that. They add it multiple times over. There's those naysayers that take away from your life. And then there's people that, you know, it's like speaking into you destroys you. It divides instead of multiplying. And why is it that we tend to want to go to the dividers?
Yeah, right.
When we have something that upsets us or something goes wrong, instead of going to the multipliers, which is who we should be calling.
That's right.
We call that guy that's going to, or that person or that friend or that whatever that's just going to let us, and they're going to agree with us.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need, when I'm down in the pits, I don't really need somebody that agrees with the fact that I want to wallow.
Right. I need
somebody that says, okay, you know, that's bad. That's terrible. I hate that's going on. Let's start talking about a way out of this, a way forward.
Yeah, my wife's really good about that. When I she'll let me whine, but she'll only let me whine to a point, and then she'll say, you know, she won't say, when are you going to get over this, but she moves me in that direction, right? Yeah. And it's good. It's good for us.
The same exact way.
Yeah. I can't help but think about the lady who was caught in adultery as it relates to this, because the woman who was caught in adultery in the Bible, if you remember the story, she was caught in adultery and they were going to stone her. And Jesus says, you know, let you who is without the first, without sin, cast the first stone. And of course, everybody left. And we all know the story. But the bottom line is that lady could have kept talking about how bad her life was and how bad things were. And instead, Jesus, you know, acknowledged what had happened and then said, okay, now go and sin no more. Don't do that again. And that's where we get this hang up of, we got this victory of nobody threw the stone, and now we're going to milk it some more instead of moving on to the next thing. Right? Mm-hmm. At least that's kind of the way I look at it. From a running standpoint, you know, I just went through a kind of an unexpected setback. I was running 70 to 80 miles every week for the whole first part of this year. I did take 1 week down purposefully, but then I've been doing fine. Well, this past week, I got sick. I got some kind of stomach bug or something. I lost 9 pounds during the week. And, you know, I was already down to as low a weight as I normally am. And so that 9 pounds was devastating. Like, I couldn't, there were days where I couldn't stand up because if I stood up, I felt like I was going to pass out. And I couldn't eat enough, and it was a rough week. So what can I do? I can either whine about it, or I can just do something. So one day, for example, and I'm not just tooting my horn, but this is what I did. I got through with my run, and I couldn't stand up afterwards. Every time I did, I got lightheaded. So I pulled weeds out of the back. We got a patio in the back that's got pavers, and there's weeds that grow up between it. And it's about that time of year to start cleaning all that up. So I got down and I started pulling weeds out. I mean, I just stayed on my knees for a couple of hours and found something to do, right? Instead of whining about it or going and doing nothing, I found something I could do that accommodated it. Mm-hmm. And it worked out fine. And in the long run, you know, I look back at it and I go, okay, I missed a week. You know, I lost 20 or 30 miles of running that week. And I didn't get in a long run at all. But the way I look at it is, well, okay, I'm going to be a little more rested now than I thought I was going to be. Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
Look on the bright side, right?
For sure.
Have you always wanted to read through the entire Bible but never found the time to do it? Well, let me do it for you.
Sign up for the Self-Paced Bible in a Year Challenge and start listening today. Every day, I read a few chapters of the Bible and give you running or walking tips and encouraging quotes. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. And this week, it prepares us for emergencies better than most sports or activities. So what does playing basketball do for you if you run into an emergency? Nothing that I can think of. But running, walking, the fact that runners or walkers are so, that we so often overcome difficult circumstances through our running, makes it easier when you run into an emergency situation to overcome that situation because you've been there. Mm-hmm. Another thing, that the discipline of training that we get as runners probably make us better prepared. We're better able to prepare for emergencies because we're used to it, mm-hmm. right? And then finally, this might be the biggest thing. I don't know. You know, I've heard it said before. If we ever have a zombie apocalypse, if you're a runner, it's a good deal because we're going to be ahead of everybody else. So, you know, if you're just in better shape.
You don't
shape,
have to be the fastest, just faster than the guy beside you.
That's right. Yep. All right. Well, we had the Boston Marathon this past week. Did you catch any of it?
I didn't. I was actually traveling during time. But when I called that Uber because I couldn't find a rental car, I got in the Uber and I could tell that the guy was... He was an African-American guy, and I could tell he wasn't from here. And he saw my backpack, and he said, "Did you see?" He said, "All three women are from my home country."
Oh,
and
really?
He was Kenyan. And then I think he said that number three on the men's side. So he said four of the six on the podium were Kenyan. And I said, "Oh, you're a runner?" And he said, "No." But it shows you how big it is in that he's not even a runner.
Yeah.
And he knew before I did.
Yeah.
You know, the status of the Boston Marathon. Wow. So I thought that was pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. It was a pretty exciting, right? Well, it was weird. It was kind of flipping the whole thing, the normal script on its head. Because normally in most international marathons, there's typically in the women's race, usually you have somebody who just kind of runs away from everybody. And it's anticlimactic. You know, maybe they're chasing a record or something and it's fun to watch, but it's, you know, it's not as exciting as if there's a big pack. And then on the men's side, you usually have a big pack. Well, this time, it was the exact opposite. You had one man who is he's one of only four 201 marathoners in the world. But he had been at the Boston Marathon three times prior. He dropped out twice and finished 30th the other time. So he's completely failed at the Boston Marathon. But he decides he's going to try to break the course record. He's going out hard from the gun. And he gets up to 2 minutes and 52 seconds ahead of the entire field at the Boston Marathon. And this was a tough field this year, including Evans Chebet, who was a two-time defending champion from Kenya. Mm-hmm. And it was fun to watch because, you know, he started fading late, as you would expect, and they were charging, but he still won by 41 seconds, so he hung on for that time. But the women's side... There were at 20 miles, there were still 20 women in a lead pack. Hmm. And I don't know that I've ever seen that before. Not that big a pack.
Yeah.
And it was fun to watch. There were two Americans in there. One of them was Sarah Hall. Mm-hmm. She dropped back a little bit before Emma Bates did. Emma Bates actually led a good portion of the race. But then she faded, I don't know, 22 miles or something. A couple of the international ladies kind of put some pressure on everybody and pulled away, and they broke up the crowd pretty quick. And in the 5K between 35 and 40K, going in from into 25th mile, they ran 15:09.
Wow.
The two ladies in the lead. I mean, they ran a 4:41 mile for the 24th mile. That'd be like one of the men running like 4:10 for the mile. I mean, it's incredible how fast they were running. And they were just both of them just trying to wear the other one out. Mm-hmm. And neither one of them successful. And in the end, Helen O'Beery wins again. That's the third international marathon she's won in a row. She won New York in the fall. And she's incredible. Golly, I don't know how you can beat her. I just don't know how you can beat her. Although she's never run a fast marathon. So interestingly, here's this woman who just never loses in the marathon, and she's never run under 220. Hmm. Where you know, the world record now is 211.
Yeah.
It's going to be really fascinating to watch her. I assume, you know, Kenya has that they are really strange in the way they pick their Olympic team. She may not even make their Olympic team.
What were the conditions at Boston?
Well, they thought it was going to be perfect. They thought they had a tailwind.
Yeah.
And it was going to be cool.
I think I read that somewhere beforehand.
And they did have a tailwind to start off with. Then it became a crosswind. But then it got a lot warmer than they thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And so the guy that was leading ran just under 61 minutes for the first half, but wow, then ran 65 minutes for the second half.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it was a fun race to watch. So, not super fast on either side, but both really good races and fun to watch. So, I'm going to be interested to see if Helen O'Beery runs in the Olympics. And if she does, I'm picking her. I don't care that she hasn't run that fast. I'm picking her. Of course, the Olympic marathon course, I think, in Paris is going to be tough. Mm-hmm. So I think that just plays to her strength.
Sure.
So it'll be fun to watch. How about a trivia question for this week? This is an interesting one. And I'm trying to figure out how to word this question so you'd kind of get it. But I hope I did that. There have been numerous movies about running, but most of them do not have big stars in them. And if they do, the star is usually not the center of the movie. There was a movie made in 1979 that, as far as I know, had the biggest star as the center of the movie about running. What was the name of that movie, and who was that star? If you know the answer to that, send it to dean@runforgod.com. And if you're the first Run Club member to answer that question accurately, then you will win $20 off in the Run for God store. Now, you probably haven't heard of this movie. You probably have never heard of this movie, but I love the movie. I think it's a great movie. It's a great story. Hmm. So if you find it, watch it. It's a good movie. All right, I'm going to leave you with this motivational thought of the week. It comes from Jim Rohn. He said, "You cannot change your destination overnight, but you can change your direction overnight."
That's well said.
Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Of course, there is an exception. You can change your destination. If you're headed toward the eternal separation of God route, you can change that in an instant.
In an instant, yeah.
Yep. So,
wow.
Again, like we said in the story, runforgod.com/peacewithgod. If you don't have that relationship, we'd love for you to watch those videos there.
All right. So, let me tell you the story that I almost told you before the podcast, but I said, maybe I'll just tell it on the podcast.
Oh, I thought it was the other. Okay.
No. I've got a few stories from this past week.
So, all right.
The theme of the Reach Gathering was NASCAR because, you know, we were in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is kind of the home of NASCAR. Mm-hmm. And so this guy that was the MC, funny guy, big, jovial, jolly guy, when I realized it was from when it was kind of a NASCAR theme, Christian setting, I went up and I was talking to him during the break on the first day, and I said, "Hey, I said, have you ever heard of the boogity boogity amen prayer?" And he said, "No, I'll check that out." And so the next day, he's lining up this game, like kind of a crowd breaker game. So he had four people. They had these little floaty NASCARs that you put around your waist like you would have in a pool. And it's kind of a dumb game. But he had them running in a relay back and forth, and he was getting ready to start it. And he said, "Now," he said, "at every NASCAR race, they honor the Lord." And on the screen, on the big screen, pops up this guy.
The video.
Who I went to school. I went to high school with this guy. Joe Nelms is his name. And if you're listening and you've never heard the boogity boogity amen prayer at a NASCAR race. You need to look it up. The guy's name is Joe Nims. And he played this. The crowd there was absolutely hysterical. It's like nobody had ever seen this before.
Wow.
But I actually put Facebook back on my phone because I don't have it on my phone, but I put it back on my phone so I could take a picture, and I tagged Joe in it, and I said, "Your legacy lives on." And I posted the picture, and he was like, "Yes!" And so if you've never heard the Boogity Boogity Amen song at a NASCAR, not song, prayer at a NASCAR race, you need to pull it up. It was, and it fit the setting of this conference just perfectly.
That's so awesome.
I thought that was great.
Great story. Yeah. Yeah. That is funny. If you don't laugh at that, you're not alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is funny stuff. All right. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.